What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we're looking back at 2024, and I don't know what a long decade 2024 has felt like. We've got a lot of that, and also we're dealing with some tech issues this morning, too. So I think that's all very fitting. We're going to talk about how AI has disappointed us, especially the whole AI hype train thing, some issues around Intel, and certainly how rough things seem moving forward. As usual, folks, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And we do try to do live streams Thursday mornings, now around 11 a.m. Eastern. We tried it this morning. Something about my internet just was not letting the audio go out properly, so apologies for that. We will definitely be having one on January 2nd for our CES preview, so tune in for that, 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, stay tuned to the end of this episode for my chat with Tim Miller, the creator of Secret Level, that new video game anthology series on Amazon, and also Dave Wilson, who's a supervising director on that show. That's at the very end of this episode. But let's look back at 2024, Sherlyn. I know you are going mad with CES prep. I see the spreadsheets. I see the emails. But also, this episode's a time for us to take a step back and think about the year as a whole. For me, my main thing was wow, we really went into this year with such an AI hype train. And at every turn, the tech has pretty much kind of disappointed us. But do you have any broad takeaways from 2024 at this point?
I mean, 2024, really, we put together, in putting together our annual list of the best things and the worst things in tech each year, some things came out as obvious winners. But when I'm looking back, right, you know what jumped out at me first? The first thing I knew I had to include in this pair of stories, the humane AI pin, right?
AI. Yes. Yes.
So absolutely AI, the promise of AI gadgets on you all the time, helping you, doing this, doing that. I think 2023 was also a year of AI, but 2024 was the year we saw more and more such huge adoption in different ways.
The applications of AI in ways.
Yeah. But also in different approaches. We saw the full on jumping in, both feet in, right? And so Microsoft, Google. Then we saw the more measured approach of measured is a relative term here. So we got Amazon with Panos at its helm of the hardware, division, bring in maybe two little AI features to the Kindle Scribe and not too much anywhere else. We also saw Apple Intelligence this year.
That's pretty measured compared to Copilot with a Microsoft.
Of course,
So
then Apple Intelligence dropped this year too. So and I think in a way that's bringing it to the masses. I think to me, Apple Intelligence, it's hard to think of as a winner or loser right now, but it is a huge development for the year. Those are things that jump out at me.
Apple Intelligence just feels like it's there. I mean, last week we talked about Genmoji and the Image Playground and kind of how disappointing a lot of those things are. But I do think overall, as we look at how these companies have tried to adopt this technology, Microsoft last year was all in, we put ChatGPT in Bing. Now you care about Bing. Bing Chat. Hello. Copilot became a thing that they integrate directly into Windows. They leaned so much on all that and all their copilots. In all my chats with Microsoft, I kept saying, is this stuff actually helpful? Are people actually using it? And they tell me they have the numbers that they are. But when I go look and try to play with Copilot or something, it's a fun search engine that can occasionally deliver some facts or, hey, compare the specs of this computer to this computer. And then I still have to go back and double check.
Exactly.
That it was right.
Exactly.
Some of those things
same
are
as last
fun.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this year, Microsoft went all in with the Copilot plus AI PC stuff. And that again seemed you're really doing this. But they also had all these partners. They had Qualcomm with the new Snapdragon chips. They had were really trying to make Windows work better on ARM chips, sort of like what Apple did 4 years ago. And it was a concerted effort. I think a lot of that shift of Windows to ARM actually works well, except for all the AI stuff. Recall was such a disaster for them. It still hasn't fully launched. People are already finding major security holes within Recall. I think there was an Ars Technica post about they were testing it and social security numbers and credit card numbers were just still visible in the screenshots. So the stuff is unproven. And I think my big takeaway here is that a lot of these companies have invested tens of billions of dollars into this technology. And they're this better lead to something. Our people told us this was the future. I believed all the hype from OpenAI. I put money, they put money into OpenAI.
Exactly.
Now they have to make it work. And I don't know if that's the thing. Have you paid attention? Like, there's the whole OpenAI feature Christmas thing they're doing, like a live stream every day for the past week or something. We've been covering some of that. Yes. It's just like, it looks like a bunch of kids like who have stumbled upon like this amazing discovery of like generative AI and have built a whole company around it and have gained a lot of funding. But ultimately, like, this is, what are we bringing to humanity here? What are we actually delivering?
Not much, I don't think. And to your point, like, I think every other company out there this year that brought us more AI features. So we had Gemini AI, we've had Galaxy AI. None of them have done it in like any way that feels meaningfully different from OpenAI, right? Like Galaxy AI feels like a straight up clone of OpenAI or ChatGPT specifically. A lot of people have options for you to change up your tone or like generate pictures of you in funny places or like clean up your pictures. Like that is, I guess, generative AI. But like it's nothing that much different than before. I mean, the only thing that's different in a like pretty bad way to me is AI overviews in your search. I don't want or need that. It's making things worse. I need to scroll further down for the actual results now. So I think you're right. I think people are like on the hype, on the bandwagon, and I don't think that anyone's really found, right? I don't think anyone's not looking. I think everyone is looking for the like way to make AI
they want
really,
it to be
like,
the
work.
Thing
they yeah. cannot find it though. I feel like they haven't found it.
And the downside examples keep popping up, like the BBC summary notification. Did you see that, Sherlyn, that yep. Apple Intelligence did, mm-hmm. which was like completely mangled the story,
and the Luigi Mangione one, right?
Yeah. Completely mangled the story and said he shot himself. That's not true. And exactly. that went out on hundreds of millions of phones, most likely.
Yeah.
Attributed to the BBC, but summarized by Apple Intelligence. And that is how, not just bad for the BBC, but that's bad for how we deliver information to people.
Right. And we scare everyone. Man. And then nobody can believe anything they see anymore. And we further feed this mistrust of whatever the hell you're being told anywhere. There's no trustworthy source anymore. The BBC, too, has a reputation that it builds and protects. And so even more, I think this is why libel and like slander cases like exist. But it's like, this is exactly what we've been banging on about with AI for a very long time, that like the second you cannot trust it, if you cannot even trust it one time, then you cannot trust it ever. Like you ever, cannot really. Just let it run itself. Yeah.
That's been like my guiding mantra with tech, right? If I cannot trust you, I'm not going to use you, like, or I will not like recommend you to people. Like that's like why I've never been like all in on Siri and the other stuff for the past decade, right?
Right.
We talk to them, they can answer basic commands, but I'm not going to like attribute life or death features to Siri or...
Right, no, nothing life or death, exactly. Right, like right now my frustration with Siri is that like I have Apple Intelligence and it just took my old useful Siri away and now I can't even set timers anymore, which is very frustrating.
You can set timers. Wait, what are you doing?
Mine can't work anymore. Mine just doesn't work anymore. And I don't even know why. There's so many little glitches and bugs with every update.
There are little things. Because you have to you have to go in and check off, hey, I want Apple Intelligence.
I did. Because I remember this happened. Yeah. True facts. Yes, you're right. I have to go.
Interesting.
So anyway.
Anyway, I do want to bring in podcast producer Ben Ellman, because I know, Ben, you had some thoughts on this too. And surely, like the AI, like you have thought about this as well. We've talked about this in past episodes.
So honestly, I'm not sure how much of our belly aching about this really matters, because I was doing a remote recording, and one thing that I've been doing recently is working with this like New York based nonprofit that does like a podcast based in schools. They'll have like kids from various like public schools around the city interviewing like high flyers in business and sports. And I was in a middle school, and this very smart, very like astute seventh grader was going to her iPad and asking Siri about everything. She was like, how many years does it take to like get through physical therapy school? How old is this person that I'm interviewing? Sure. That's going to be how people interact with ChatGPT. That's going to be how people interact with generative AI, and it's going to happen a lot sooner than we think.
That's what we're hearing from a lot of, I mean, from, there are several reports from teachers, from people like, hey, kids are kind of fighting me with facts because they're just getting things from ChatGPT. I do have to say, though, like, that is also, that's what kids do. When I was a kid, when I was that age, like, I love just, like, picking open, like, opening an encyclopedia and just looking up stuff and reading stuff, or when I was looking up, if I wanted to know more about a specific animal or something, like, yeah, I would try to find an encyclopedia entry or something and try to get that information. So on the one hand, like, this is like the potential to be like a really powerful information delivery system. I just hope these companies are aware of like the clear downsides here of when these things go wrong. And we live in a really like bad misinformation soup right now, which has affected everything from elections to the way people talk to each other. Like, it's the whole drone thing, which we'll talk a little bit about, but that purely comes down to that is mass hysteria based on a lack of clear information. You had the one who was a senator who pulled up a picture of a TIE fighter.
A TIE fighter.
It's like, yes, look at the drones fighter. They recovered. What is the government keeping from us? It's all very stupid right now. And
in Christ, you are the government.
And also, this stuff is making us dumber in many ways at a time where, like, we cannot afford this. We need to be really smart about how we're moving forward into the future, dealing with climate change, dealing with like a lot of major issues affecting the next few generations. We are completely ill prepared for that. And instead, we're spending billions on AI and also using tons of fossil fuels, like using tons of energy to power these misinformation engines. So that I'm just kind of worried right now. I hope like next year shows us something about how AI could be more useful or how they're taking these concerns seriously. Because right now I have little hope that AI is going to be a hugely beneficial feature for us, I guess.
I agree with you. I think Ben's example and other examples I've heard from parents and teachers out there in the real world is that like now, you know, we all learned what from books. We learned from slightly more static formats of information or sources of information. And the people that are dealing with kids growing up now in the age of AI, the feedback loop is a bit like this. You hear something from somewhere, your kid, your friend, your teacher, your neighbor, whatever. You go ask a source, and frequently now the source is AI. And then AI tells you whether what you've learned is true or not. And then you go tell your parent or a teacher, and they're like, no, that answer is wrong, or yes, that's correct. But then they go back to AI and they question it again and again, four or five times. And the answer, and I don't know if this is because the way generative AI is these days is to generate a different answer each time, it's not always the same. You can ask the same question five times, and one time out of five, there's the fifth dentist that caved, right? It's like, no, you shouldn't be doing this. And the kid is just, the feedback path now is that there is no hard absolute truth. The truth can change depending on the number of times you ask it. That's what I've heard from one parent. Like, they'll ask, ChatGPT over and over again. So yeah, that's what
you can tell. You can tell ChatGPT, by the way, hey, you're wrong about this. And it'll be like, okay, right. Yes, I was wrong about this. We don't know if that's going to apply to your like black box thinking engine moving forward.
Right. So for me, that's what's fundamentally shifting here is that the societal idea of truth as immovable fact, if that goes away, I think there's no real like pillar of support internally for a lot of people anymore, right? It's, like, I feel like that's why science and news have come under fire. Yeah. I don't know.
Dark times ahead. It's also
Let me play the other side of the argument for a second here, though. I was in high school when Wikipedia was just starting to be like really accepted as here's a big repository of like information about the entire world. And all of my teachers were saying like, absolutely do not use Wikipedia as a source because people can edit Wikipedia. And I bet that people were having a similar conversation about like, if you can just edit Wikipedia to say whatever you want, then that's really scary.
Definitely.
How are these two situations different?
Well, it's different because Wikipedia at least had like a group of volunteers who tried to take it on themselves to try to keep that information like vaguely accurate. But Wikipedia is open to attack. That's why most teachers are like, yes, please don't cite Wikipedia in your paper or whatever. Please go look up actual in the source of information. And there were like some stopgaps to try to prevent Wikipedia from becoming this terrible thing. And it's not as if books are always super accurate either. Like if you grew up in Texas, the version of American history that you get is very different than what you'll get in New England or in other places. Like different areas will use books to manipulate stories. Like that's a tale as old as time for humanity, basically. Like that's what we use books for in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Actually, given what you're saying, like, what I used to do, and actually what I was eventually like encouraged to do, was you know, go to one of the like really well-sourced, really built-out Wikipedia articles. Go to the sources and then go find that book and like read the book for context. The issue may be that Gen AI and especially like ChatGPT sometimes just makes up sources whole cloth.
Well, they do try to link to sources, but who's doing that? Who's going and looking at the sources of their ChatGPT queries, right? And even in, you're right, sometimes
well,
they
or
they
if
make
you
up...
ask ChatGPT to cite its own sources, then
I think Gemini kind of does it by default at the bottom, but it's still more work than I think what people want, because right now we're in an immediate gratification information age and we are like ill prepared as a society to deal with it. So I don't know, folks. I would love to know what our listeners think, because there was a lot of hype. And I think looking now, like we saw reports that a lot of AI research has slowed down in terms of like how much they thought these models would grow. We're seeing features like Microsoft Recall keep running into issues. Like they have had to delay it several times. They're slowly trickling it out, but there are still like very glaring security holes here when you allow an AI engine to like suck up all the information, you know, that's on your computer. There are clear issues that we're dealing with here. Do we need like more ethical consideration of how we deploy these technologies? I think all of those things are true. And it sucks that this is an issue we're dealing with at a time where it's like there's a lot of other stuff going on in society, too, that we really need to take a handle on. And just not all of it's going so well. So that's AI in general. The AI PC hype engine to like very similar issues I have with that. At the very least, like the whole AI PC trend has led to better computers. The whole Copilot Plus thing has led to minimum specs. Minimum specs, though, 16 gigabytes of RAM. I don't want to be even thinking about an 8 gigabyte RAM computer anymore, right? Yeah. And that's kind of the thing Microsoft has laid down. Apple is doing it too. Like all of their computers now, minimum spec is 16 gigabytes of RAM because of AI, because you need that amount of RAM to hold AI models and run them. So maybe not for the best reason, not for the reasons we've been asking for them to bump up RAM for years.
My main gripe with AI PCs is the ones that have the Copilot button, and I cannot stand that it's, well, so maybe I'm a niche use case where my right and left control buttons are crucial. I love my PC shortcuts.
You love your right control button?
I love my right control button. You don't know, especially in the edit and writing process, I use the right control button and backspace and control and delete both a lot. Control backspace and control delete I use all the time. And if y'all haven't been using it, you need to start. It deletes entire words, not, and then, you know, shift function or whatever it is does entire sentences.
You should be able to program that key to do other things, basically.
I want
to
control, yeah. If thank you for letting me know that. I would remap my Copilot button to being back to a control button.
That's a good call. I'm sure a lot of people would want that. That has become such a big marketing thing for Microsoft. Everybody loves Copilot. All they want is Copilot. They want a Copilot all day. And yeah, when I talked to Microsoft executives last year, I was like, Copilot is not always accurate. And I don't know how you can expect people to trust a feature that is delivering wrong information sometimes. And I love their argument that this is a learning process. We hope people will understand. It's kind of not how any of this works. To me, anyway, that's not how computers should work. Okay. What else from 2024? Things not going so good for Intel. Poor Intel. They fired Pat Gelsinger, CEO Pat Gelsinger.
Did we find out if he was fired or like? Do we
pretty? Yeah. He was kind of like let out the door,
gotcha.
Because of it's a whole bunch of things. Go check out Dan Cooper's article about that. Firing Pat Gelsinger doesn't solve Intel's problems. He was basically a longtime Intel worker. Like he had started there as an early engineer.
Yeah,
I believe. And
40-year tenure, right? Yeah.
And well, he came back in. I believe he was at VMware for a while, and he came back in to try to like revive the companies in some ways. And the big thing he was trying to do was to like make Intel more of a foundry company, a company that is building its own chips. And there were some bold ideas there, except like the markets of the last few years have been kind of disastrous for chip manufacturers, for the tech industry as a whole. So they're dealing with that. They're dealing with a lot of other, like the actual chips that they're shipping have had issues. Like I believe the 11th through 13th gen chips have had all sorts of voltage issues. Things have just not been going Intel's way. So Gelsinger was essentially forced out of the company. They're not publicly saying fired, but you know, that's kind of what it looks and feels like here. And they're going to get the largest amount of funding from the CHIPS Act, but we don't know what's going to happen with that either. And if the next administration will like halt any of that money moving forward. There's a lot we really don't know, but things are looking rough for Intel. It's just not so great. So that's another big story that I'm taking into, honestly, into CS too. Like, I'm looking forward to talking to more PC manufacturers about what they're saying at this point, or what they're thinking next for Intel. Another major issue, I guess, leading into 2025, is I do think the next administration is going to really roll back all the like regulatory gains the Biden administration has made. So that comes to things like admissions. It comes to moves by the FTC to like curtail more monopolistic practices from these companies. What the next administration wants to do is essentially like off the rails, like no regulation. Let these companies do whatever they want. I mean, right now, right at this very second, Trump and President Musk, I don't know why Elon Musk's name keeps getting thrown around, but he's essentially co-President Musk, Sherlyn. He is co-president because there are all these stories about like Donald Trump and Elon Musk are doing these things. And right people now they're trying to. Yeah.
People on the audio podcast didn't see the brain fart that I just had when you said President Musk. I was like, what?
Yeah. It is good. Like the news right now is that Donald Trump and Elon Musk are trying to just stop the government from functioning. That is their current goal, is to have a government shutdown that lasts, a couple of months, which would hurt people severely, like federal funding, Social Security money going out. A lot of those things will just not be happening. People will suffer, but these billionaires will just will consider it a success for themselves. So,
yeah.
Hey, rough 2024. I was having a hard time as I was like planning out this episode. What do we have to look forward to in 2025? I feel like Tina Belcher and Bob's Burgers just going.
Tina, enough already. Come on.
Is anything in 2025 or the years ahead giving you hope, Sherlyn, at this point? Anything to look forward to?
Actually, you know what's weird? I don't know if this is going to be a good thing or not, but I am curious about the impact of the growing bans on social media platforms. Like Australia is looking to ban social media for under 16s or has banned. I mean, yeah, I think enforcement is going to be a problem.
You're
I think
looking
there's a
forward
lot of,
to this?
I'm not looking forward. I'm curious about the impact. I think I could see it as a potential positive, but I don't know how it's going to be enforced to become a positive. I don't know that, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I think in an ideal world, in a parallel universe, maybe this goes well. And then we can see how, right, that impacts people's behaviors, mental health, growing up, maturity, I don't know, sense of self, those things. What am I actually looking forward to in 2025, though? Gosh, it's hard to say. Inflation?
No, you're not looking forward to inflation.
I know, exactly. I'm not. I can't think of one good thing.
We talked about this around the social media bans, is like these countries cannot effectively enforce this. Like this is more, it feels like a stopgap political measure, right, that they can say we did this, but not actually change anything for the kids. Whereas actual privacy laws and thinking more about like the actual issues behind social media and how we're using it and regulating these companies more, like those are the things that actually matter. And if you say, oh, you're just banned, you're like, you just cannot do it under 16, don't ask about specifics. Don't ask about execution.
Right. Exactly. Like, how are you going to age verify? How are you going to,
It's basically the same thing as the porn bans in various states around the country. Like, how are you going to enforce that? Are you going to, like, make people upload their IDs? No. And also, the kids who want to find it are going to find it.
Porn will
it
find a way.
It has never been a problem for
porn
kids.
Porn will find a way. I think that's our...
Porn will find a way, but social media will find a way.
You're right. And I think one thing you wanted to bring up, Ben, around 2024 was that, it doesn't look like there's going to be a clear next Twitter, right? Or a clear like successor to Twitter. We talked about Blue Sky. You guys had a great conversation around Blue Sky and where you are in social media now, Sherlyn. You and Jess Condit and Valentina, right? And that was a great chat. It also makes it clear, like, we're just going to be all over the place, right? People are going to be on their Discord. A lot of people are on Blue Sky. I think the people who like Twitter in a certain way are really vibing with Blue Sky, which is kind of where I am right now. The hype boosters, I don't know, the clout chasers are going to be on Threads forever and Instagram. And part of the early beauty of Twitter was that it just felt like everybody was on it. I don't want to like, idolize early Twitter too much, but it was a really special thing. And now we're just like trying to regrade it.
You're going to have a better sense for what a certain person's vibe is to figure out what platform they're going to be on.
And if you're a media person, it's probably Blue Sky. One of the best skeets I can recall, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Moneyball, but there's a great line there about like how you rebuild a baseball team, right? And it's the screenshot is just Brad Pitt saying, "We cannot rebuild Twitter, but we can rebuild it in the aggregate." And that is kind of feels like that what Blue Sky has done. It's like taken some of the best parts of Twitter, but is also refashioning a whole thing. But it's also now under fire for all sorts of other things, like because of people are calling for Blue Sky to ban certain users who are coming on who are like known anti-trans journalist types. And Blue Sky has not followed through with that and has in fact allowed that journalist to stay on. And it's led to a huge mess. Like, so these companies are not perfect either. They all like have weird libertarian vibes at times. I don't know. It's right now, it's just the place where I can talk to my friends, and I kind of like that.
Without a large paying user base, then they need to think about like what gets eyes on the site and what could eventually get them advertisers. And having the broadest swath of people gets them the broadest swath of advertisers. So you could be mad about, you know, X or Y person joining Blue Sky, but unless you are ponying up like $5 a month and you say, "I really want to do this. I really, really want to like pay for this site in order for, you know, a certain kind of moderation to be this way," they're not going to listen to you.
Well, also, like, advertising is, like, the last thing they've thought about at Blue Sky. Like, I see reports that Jay Graber, the CEO, has not ruled out adding ads eventually. But the thing they've more talked about is like, hey, a premium tier for the really dedicated users who want more features or something. And a lot of people, at least prior to this issue, were like, yes, I would pay for that. Personally, I would too. But yeah.
Until they roll that out, they're in growth mode.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Growth mode means growth for everyone.
Sort of, except they have not tried to scale like other... They have scaled organically compared to a lot of other companies, like compared to what Threads has done or compared to what how thirsty these other companies have been. But anyway, we had trouble coming up with things we're excited about for next year, so I called in some help from other Engadget reporters. We've got Lawrence Bonk, contributing reporter, and Danny Gallagher, a writer at the site, to tell us things that they're actually looking forward to. So here's Lawrence first.
Hello, everyone. It's Lawrence from Engadget.com. 2025, huh? I am especially looking forward to the Nintendo Switch 2. Not the console itself so much. It's just going to be, you know, an Android tablet with two controllers on the end. And I already have a Steam Deck. That's not a diss, because I am very much looking forward to software, the launch software in particular. What big game will Nintendo launch with the console when it most likely comes out early, mid, late, sometime next year? My guess is something with an Italian plumber in it, and I'm very much excited to play a new 3D Mario, a new Mario Kart, or whatever they have planned for us. Other than that, I'm excited for some music gadgets from Teenage Engineering and that telepathic instruments Orchid chord player, which I actually pre-ordered. Go me. Waste money. And yeah, finally, I hope that, beyond all of my doubts, that on-device AI can become useful for my day-to-day life, which so far, it's a garbage can. All right. Happy New Year, everyone.
Now here's Danny.
I'm looking forward to gaming going back to portable. Sure, we got a dozen totable gaming devices, like the Mayu Mini Plus that I picked up this past year for my birthday, that plays all kinds of classic arcade and console and PC games, and our phones that can do everything but make a quality phone call. But mainstream gaming hasn't embraced portable since Nintendo killed off the 3DS, and the Nintendo Switch has done a good job of making a console portable as well as something that you can, you know, play at home. But I miss the standalone devices. That could change in the next year with the second Nintendo Switch and the new PlayStation Portable. And if it's a big enough hit, I mean, I'm hoping we could see like the Xbox Series XS, the XS means extra small, or the Nintendo 3DS 2 XL XS.
I would love to know also what our listeners think. Podcastengadget.com. Let's move on to other news and kind of like the next hellscape that we're looking forward to. The TikTok ban is something we've been talking about for a while. The latest piece of news is that the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear TikTok's ban appeal on January 10th. So that is going to be happening. I do see people like preparing for the TikTok ban, like saying, hey, you can find me on Instagram or wherever. I will be really sad if this actually goes through, because it's the sort of thing, it's again the sort of performative move that doesn't accomplish much, especially when we have like real threats from China like happening right now. That's been happening for like decades. We've talked about cyber warfare and how like the Chinese government has tried to infiltrate U.S. Networking and U.S. systems and has effectively done it. And it's just this sort of like quiet cold war that's been happening. But sure, ban TikTok, that'll make you feel better. Have you like changed your thoughts on this, Sherlyn, or like where are you thinking on the TikTok ban?
I don't think it's going to happen. Like she said just now about bans, I think people keep talking nowadays. They're a bit more like, oh my gosh, if TikTok still exists next year or blah, 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 right? Like they say those things, but I don't know if anyone really believes it. I also think China, if it really wanted to, would find different ways to do this. Like we said, there's already like all sorts of, you know, tentacles in the American pie market from China. So there's TikTok, it just happens to be one of the hugest, most powerful ones right now. But TikTok came out from Douyin and came out of like nowhere, kind of. I'm sure China will be able to find another way. Temu, Shein, so many ways to get on your phones.
I feel like Temu is the bigger threat.
Right? Yes.
I mean, Shein has like been a big one too, because
Temu came out of literal nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, y'all, yeah. What if they put microchips on every single
Temu?
There's
literally so many things. There's so many things that could go wrong. Yeah.
We're like, we love buying things for $2 and $3 a pop. Let's just give this Chinese website our addresses.
Yeah. Let's buy video surveillance cameras from Temu. Nothing could go wrong there. That's a whole, yeah.
And on top of that, Dev and I were just talking about getting little DJI like lav mics. Literally yesterday, we were like, oh, this would be so cool to play around with. And Dev was like, I'm going to bring this to CES. DJI is a Chinese company.
Yeah. Who has, by the way, the news this morning, DJI has evaded a U.S. ban, but it has 1 year to prove its products aren't a national security threat. Because yeah, DJI has been like a market leader in drones and camera technology around drones and gimbals and everything, but it is also a Chinese company. So like, how far is this going? We also saw the story about the TP-Link routers are being investigated by US authorities. There could be something there. That's actually a really dangerous one, because that is actual router technology. So they could see all the data, except we've seen a lot of analysis saying that TP-Link routers there's no evidence they are a threat right now, but it's sort of like the Chinese connection is enough to make people a little scared, even though we've got like, you go look behind like most federal agencies right now, the stuff powering their networks will be a lot of like Chinese hardware too. It's, to me, that's the bit like, what is powering the FBI and other organizations at federal offices? Yeah.
I mean, didn't we see this happen with ZTE and Huawei a while back?
And Huawei.
ZTE was deep in the networking space with a lot of like American infrastructure, and Huawei, yes, with phones and also like networking products. So yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe they're coming for TP-Link next, you know? It's doable. I feel as if like, or it's somehow gone the way where a consumer-facing product disappears, but maybe they're still in like infrastructure space. I don't know.
And the infrastructure is what you really have to worry about.
Yes, exactly.
Expect more stuff like that, like more anti-China sentiment across the government. Although it's funny that Trump was the person who was like saying we should ban TikTok early on, is now like, has clearly gotten some money from somebody. And it's like, hey, I like TikTok. I like TikTok.
Meanwhile, he's like, tariffs.
Tariffs. Also, another thing to look forward to in 2025 is all your shit getting more expensive for no reason. For no reason at all. There was also a report yesterday that apparently the Tim Cook dinner with Donald Trump may have led to Trump saying Apple does not have to deal with the tariffs like for Chinese-made products. So it's a,
cool.
It's a, that, the thing about tariffs, and a lot of people have written about this, this is how it has worked in like other countries. We are essentially turning ourselves into like a Russian oligarchy where the rich companies, the really popular, successful companies can give money to the people in charge to be like, hey, rules don't apply to me. And that is essentially what's happening. We also saw that with like a lot of major companies essentially just giving the Trump campaign, giving them millions of dollars, ABC capitulating with that, the potential defamation lawsuit. They just paid
Jeff
him.
Bezos giving like yeah. $1 million to Trump's transition and inauguration.
That's just $1 million, you know, $1 million to cement your friendliness with the authorities. This is
that's
all
that's pocket
sad
change
stuff.
For someone like
doesn't
Bezos.
Matter. It's literally and pocket
a company
change
like
Bezos.
Amazon.
Yeah. He probably has jewelry that, you know, could be worth $1 million. I don't know. Anyway, dark times ahead, folks. Dark times, which is why I had a hard time thinking of, like, things to look forward to in 2025. I don't know. Game Awards stuff. Game Awards happened last Thursday. We didn't get a chance to mention anything, but there were some things. Go check out all of our coverage from that. Some great trailers. I'm really looking forward to that first trailer. I'm looking forward to the game, Intergalactic, The Heretic Prophet, the next piece of IP from Naughty Dog, who has been stuck in frickin' Last of Us mode forever. And Uncharted mode, you know. So this is a new space. Check out this trailer, Sheldon, because it looks like a lot of fun. It's like a
can
new
I just
space.
Say?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, not just the trailer for the Intergalactic Heretic Prophet. I'm just saying when I read back on our coverage for Game Awards, I was extremely stoked to find out the makers of Overcooked.
Yeah, they
have a new game coming. Is
to
it like
take
a
away
creepy?
All your time.
Yeah, it's called Stage Fright. It's also going to be a co-op game. And then also I've been like, a lot of people tell me to play It Takes Two. So it's like looking as if they have another game coming out, the people who made It Takes Two. So yeah, I mean, I am personally excited. That's what I'm looking forward to in the next year. I don't know about y'all.
The next year Overcooked sequel, basically. Like there have been multiple Overcooked, right?
Yes, many. There's a lot of like packs you can add on and whatnot, but this is going to be so cool. I'm very
something
excited.
For you, Shalin, from the Big Game Awards. But anyway, Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet looks like a lot of fun. Looks like a sci-fi spacefaring bounty hunter thing. A lot of references in that alone, like references to Akira, Cowboy Bebop, Firefly. Like it's all in there. Alien a little bit too. All in like a really short trailer. So I hope the game itself lives up to all of that. I don't know, those clear influences. One thing I want to point out, it is really cool that Capcom is deciding to make games again, especially from its old IP, Onimusha. But bringing back Okami. Mm. Okami was a good game. My thing is, Capcom, what are you doing? Mega Man Legends. I don't know if anybody remembers Mega Man Legends, but that was the 3D Mega Man that was on PlayStation 1 back in the day. And it was cool because it almost looked like it was like an anime show. So it had like really decent quality graphics. It felt like you were playing Mega Man in a 3D space. They were going to make another one of those. That ended up becoming Dead Rising. And the series has been dead since then. They haven't really done much with Mega Man in general. Give us a real Mega Man Legends revival. Make it do for Mega Man, you know, what Sony did for like the Spider-Man games. Like give us a big city to explore, do Mega Man stuff in 3D. I think that would be really, really cool. Capcom is doing really well these days based on like how well Street Fighter's doing. Monster Hunter's M2, right? So like they're doing really well. I would love to see. Give me more Mega Man Legends. anything you want to shout out that you're working on, Trillin, beyond preparing for CES?
It will be CES and end of year. And I am working on some Apple Intelligence stories. I just couldn't. Every time I try to finish something, like about seven other things get dumped on my plate. So maybe next week, I will be working next week, which is nice. And most of the team will be off. So that means I get to work in a quiet work environment.
You just have time to work.
It will be fun. I'll actually get to writing and working and planning. Next week will be interesting. But yes, I continue to be working on work for the holidays. So.
Good. I hope you get some time to rest, Shalin. I'm also trying to take time off mainly because my kids are out of school and that's what a lot of parents end up doing. But given the sheer amount of stuff we have to do for CES, I'm probably clocking at some point. Anyway, let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you have, Shalin?
I saw this for the first time last night and actually it stayed with me. So I thought I'd mention it. I also made sure to check the Rotten Tomatoes score before I mentioned anything. And it's pretty okay. high. It's not bad. It's not bad. Okay. And it's leaving Netflix. That's why I watched it. It is this film featuring or starring Ethan Hawke called Predestination.
Love Predestination. Yes.
Yeah. It was really, really good. It's basically like a time travel film, but also like takes the concept of paradox like all the way. All the way full circle, very Ouroboros, and it's kind of metaphors and stuff. It's a story of a time agent meeting someone and recruiting them to become a time agent and creating all kinds of paradoxical
Temporal agent. Sounds so much cooler.
Sure. They're not just time traveling people. I think I enjoy a lot of time travel shows, right? And science fiction. It's one of the biggest science fiction tropes, but this one. Was very curious the topics that explored, not just paradox, but like gender identity, like a lot of that stuff was really, really cool. So
cool stuff. I wasn't expecting Sarah Snook in that movie.
Really, really good in that.
That's where I first noticed her. Yeah.
Yeah. I never knew what she was in before this movie.
Succession.
Before I saw this.
Have you not seen Succession?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we got into this about there's so many things I need to watch.
Wait, so you haven't seen Succession?
I have not. If you seen Succession.
Yeah. I'm thinking of like the things made in like the last 5 years that you should probably watch immediately given where you are.
How about Fall of the House of Usher?
That's a good show, but not as Succession is sort of like one of those generationally great shows.
Yeah. True Detective Night Country. I've seen that.
I also like True Detective Night Country.
How about basically such a long list. You know what I mean? I'm making my way.
I would highly recommend prioritizing
Succession. But Devendra. You know me, right? Between something like Succession and The Haunting of Hill House, what am I likely to watch first?
I mean,
What's the other?
Aren't you done with it? I am.
I'm just saying that there's like in the last 5 years, there've been so much stuff that like I prioritize. Like, so something else comes out, I'll watch it first, right? Predestination.
I'm glad you liked Predestination, Trillin. I have liked to recommend... The other, so it's by, that movie's by Michael Spierig and Peter Spierig, they're brothers, they just call themselves the Spierig Brothers. Yep. They made a movie in 2009, also starring Ethan Hawke, and let me just read the setup of this movie, because I think it is fully within your wheelhouse. In the year 2019, this would have been 10 years in the future for this movie, a plague has transformed almost every human into vampires. Faced with a dwindling blood supply.
Is he talking about Daybreakers?
Daybreakers, yes.
I love Daybreakers. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I rewatch it every year.
I knew it.
Yeah, yeah. So now you know me.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Daybreakers is one of my all-time favorites. I didn't realize Predestination was them. And also just based on... I think I got it confused with Possessors on Netflix, which I was like, I'm not watching that. Well, after this, I'll go watch Possessors.
I think you would like Possessors. That's also more freaky stuff. That's from Brandon Cronenberg's, David Cronenberg's son. Anyway, I'm glad you like Predestination. Yeah, you folks listening, go check out their movies. Somehow they ended up doing like, they did the Jigsaw movie that nobody saw. They also did that Winchester movie that barely exists. So they have not had a good run. They are doing the sequel to that movie.
The Winchester movie where it's like the old lady. I saw that. See, look, I didn't watch Succession, but I watched the Winchester movie. Just FYI, this Schlocky is where my tastes are. Yes.
I totally get it, Sherlyn. Well, actually, maybe something you would be into, a bit sci-fi-y. I've been watching... on Netflix, a show called Pantheon. This is an animated series. It was initially on AMC, and like it got a lot of great reviews, but nobody had AMC Plus. Really, it was just so hard to see for a while. So it is now streaming on Netflix. It's created by Craig Silverstein. It is about it's a very modern show. It's about a young girl who lost her dad recently, and there are government conspiracies involved. There's a large tech company that's very Apple-esque that is not trying to do AI. They're trying to do something called, what is the term that they have for that? But they are basically trying to take human minds and turn them into digital intelligences. And there's a lot of
like
talk
that
about
Black
this.
Mirror episode. Go
yes,
on, sorry.
Yes, it is, it's essentially like that Black Mirror episode. But that is like what this company is trying to do. There are government experiences going on. This show is very much, I don't know if you ever saw Serial Experiments Lane, but there's a lot of that in here in terms of like how people are connected by computers and how technology kind of rules our lives. There's a lot of Neon Genesis Evangelion in there as well. Good stuff. Pantheon season 1, it is on Netflix right now. Season 2, weirdly, is out there in the wild, but has not been, never been shown in the US. It only came out in like New Zealand for some reason. I believe you can watch on YouTube, but it's a great show. It's tremendous. I can imagine season two coming to Netflix eventually. And this is the sort of show Netflix should just like fund. Like Arcane is over. They should like produce more shows like this that are wild and cool and really inventive. And I think it's trending on Netflix. So clearly people seem to be into it. So this has been a depressing episode because we are trying to look back to this, this hellscape of a year. And
oh, next week's going to be so much fun. Next episode. Well, next episode we're out.
Next
episode
is going to be.
But next week we're out. Next episode. It's the CES preview, and I'm very excited for that one.
I think we'll actually have some things to look forward to, but even then, it's like more AI stuff. I don't know. I want to shout out the trailer for James Gunn's Superman landed this morning, and it is good stuff. I did a quick trailer reaction to that over at the Filmcast. You could check that out in that feed. But I love James Gunn. I think he is a great artist and creator to kind of bring Superman back to what we think of him as, like as a symbol of hope. This is very much not the Zack Snyder Superman that we could tell from this trailer. Like, there's color, there's like playfulness. I don't know the actor that he picked, David Gordon-Sweat. Have not seen them in anything before, but he looks like a really capable Clark Kent / Superman. Kind of an unknown. Nicholas Holt is Lex Luthor. Nicholas Holt, who is having quite the year, he's Lex Luthor. You should go watch this
Nicholas
trailer.
Nicholas Holt. Not just having quite the year, having quite the life. I've been invested in Nicholas Holt since very early on.
Before
X-Men, but...
I mean, he's not the A Bad Boy Kid, is he?
No,
he was
I'll tell you the movie that got me into Nicholas Holt. Hang on. I have to look it up because it's in the filmography, I'm sure. God, he's so cute.
he's a little cutie pie. He's about a boy. He's the about a boy.
He is the about a boy boy, but that's not when. It'd be a bit gross if I was into him then. what was I? Maybe I was into him for.
Was it Warm Bodies? That seems like up your alley.
It was X-Men. It was definitely X-Men. I saw Warm Bodies, but I'm looking at his filmography. I'm like, what was it that drew me in? It had to be.
Did
X-Men,
you ever watch Skins? Because he was in Skins for a while.
No, it was like must have been.
There's I love
no
Nicholas
Wikipedia.
Holt.
What the hell? There's no filmography section for him. Just go to career.
Type IMDb and
you're right. Name. You're right.
There you go.
I am looking at the just before X-Men, and it had to be X-Men. There's nothing else before that I was done into. So
just this year, though, I just watched. I've seen Nosferatu, which comes out on Christmas and is incredible. I think you will like that a lot. It's a very dark, gothic sort of romance, actually, because like Nosferatu was always a story, and even Bram Stoker's Dracula was a story about, like, you know, a love that cannot be, basically. But he's also great in Juror Number 2, and I need to see that movie The Order, the one starring Jude Law. I hear he's fantastic in that. So what a year. What a time.
What a great year for film.
Great year for film. That's what I have to look forward to. And that's why I'm shouting out Superman, because I think we get so many fun things. We get the original, like, John Williams theme being kind of revived for a new generation. We have Crypto the dog. Crypto the dog looks adorable, and I want Superman was always a symbol of hope, right? And now we have a symbol of hope for 2025.
I'm going to shout out that I'm super excited for Severance season 2 to come back in 2025. I think there's a lot to look forward to in entertainment. I think
there absolutely is. I will not spoil anything for you, Sherlyn, but I have seen like the first half of Severance season 2. It's very good.
Good. I'm glad. I'm very. I'm so excited for more Severance, for more TV shows.
We're going to have an interview with the creator of Severance too in a couple weeks. So it'll all be fun times.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky, Mastodon, you know, wherever, and at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me, I guess, your favorite time-traveling paradoxes, you can send them to me on Blue Sky at sherlyn.bsky.social, and that's C-H-E-R-L-Y-N-N. Or you can just email me at sherlyn@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review anywhere you're listening, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
All right, and here's my chat with Tim Miller and Dave Wilson, the folks working on Secret Level. Brief thoughts on the show. I think it's a pretty serviceable anthology. I wish it were better. I wish a lot of these segments were longer. But Tim Miller is a guy I've talked to around Love, Death, and Robots. I also really liked the last Terminator he did. That was Dark Fate, I believe. So he is a great creator. He also did Deadpool, the first one. So he's somebody I like to listen to. I think he had some interesting thoughts about like how they approach Secret Level. So take a listen to that chat. Tim and Dave, thank you so much for joining us on the Engadget podcast. I have to ask, I loved, you know, Love, Death, and Robots. What was the impetus for doing a gaming-focused series similar to that?
I'm really embarrassed to say how long it took me to get around to the idea that we should just do Love, Death, and video games.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really is doubly embarrassing because games are our core business. And I think in a lot of ways, it's full circle because what I did to get Love, Death, and Robots greenlit was basically just show our video game trailers to Netflix uh-huh. and say, give us some money and we'll give you more like stuff like this. So it's a shockingly long time for me to come back to that idea.
Yeah, I guess it is full circle. I remember some of your early trailers, and I used to, in my dorm room, I think my friends and I used to just like ogle over those things.
So way to make me feel old. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's all for us. Dave, anything from your end, like your thoughts on doing this as a video game series?
Look, I love video games since as far back as I can remember. Like, I think the only thing Tim probably loves more than video games is comic books. But for me, it's just video games has been the high watermark for me. I wanted to make video games when I was a teenager growing up.
Didn't we all? Yeah.
Yeah. And then realized I sucked at coding. And and there were other ways to entertain people.
And then I realized I wasn't that smart. Yeah. which is why I went into art.
That's all right.
I learned the same thing in college. I was going to be comp sci, and I was like, philosophy. Ideas. No,
I did all that. We were coding, and this is like my buddy was used to code in assembly language, which I like mm-hmm. was the only way to get graphics onto your screen like fast enough back in the day.
Wow!
And okay. I realized like that is not for me.
No, that's like
but it was so way back when Photoshop didn't exist. I had to code the graphics package that I was making the graphics for our game in. It was a long, long time ago, but yes. And then I discovered like this and the series is essentially like the love child of all my vices in life.
Maybe. I mean, listen, that's great stuff. That's great stuff. I'm wondering like, but between both of you guys, clearly you both love games. Have you thought about at this point in your careers and seeing how much easier it is to produce games? Have you guys thought about doing any sort of projects like that, an actual game project?
Oh man, they seem infinitely harder.
Yeah, do you think it's easy to produce games?
Let's
ask the Concord people about that.
No, like branching narratives, like no ways. When we were shooting the, I was sitting on set and next to Leonard Boyarsky, who makes the Outer Worlds video games, and we were looking at the script, and he was showing me the branching tree of dialogue he was writing for that game, and I was like, never. Never ever do I want to do that.
Yeah,
all well, that's the like hard mode.
All the rules of storytelling are just like out the window, you know.
They would go the hard way. They give you a lot of options, but not all games have to do that. I love the Outer Worlds one, by the way. I've only seen like half of the shorts so far, but they're all like great in different ways. I love how they're all doing different things. A lot of them also feel like pilots. Like they could be pilots for a TV series or some sort of longer projects. Do you guys know, is that a consideration like for any of these shorts?
We've never had that thought. We don't know what you're talking about. Or why?
Mega Man.
Didn't think that.
Come on.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, yes. Mega Man for sure. I was like, man, we need even the music at the end of that, which is like a
so good
reinvention of the classic. I was like, this episode has to keep going. But yes, I mean, like, it's rather obvious that they're all shadow pilots. But you know, not set out to be created that way. It was just like.
Yeah, because then you'd have to be risk averse. And I love the fact that. I don't think that every game deserves to be a movie or a television show. I'm not talking about anyone particular in our episode, but it's some live best in a shorter format, just like some books are better movies than they are television.
But it was a way to take some chances for sure.
It's funny you bring up Conquer too, because that was such a great example of, I guess, the volatility of the gaming industry right now. What, just even getting that short into the series, did it kind of feel weird that the game itself just doesn't exist anymore?
Not really. Mm-hmm. We first and foremost feel sorry for the developers because
that's so rough. Yeah,
yeah, they're great folks, and they put their heart and soul into the game, like we all do when we put ourselves out there. But there was no world in which we were not going to show the episode, because it would be insult to injury, because all those great artists worked on that and created. I mean, by the time we found out, the show was actually wrapped already. So all that animation and beautiful lighting and great visual effects, we were not going to toss it. It's a great story.
Yeah. There would be absolutely no reason to just leave it lying on the cutting room floor. Like, it's a great episode, and it should be seen.
It's kind of a unique thing that just exists now. This is the remnants of Concord in the universe, I guess.
Until it's not.
Like, who knows what's going to happen? It was a secret to everybody, you know, how quickly that thing fell apart. This is the second anthology series from you guys. I'm just wondering, too, like, is there anything particularly compelling about that format for you? Just the ability to tell lots of different stories in different ways. Is that kind of part of the appeal there?
I have a very short attention span, so I love anthology. And you can, you know, it doesn't require, it's the same thing when you're reading. A novel requires some investment. So, you know, you sit down and you open it and you take a deep breath and you hope it's good. And if it is, then fantastic. You're set for a week. But if not, then you might have to put it down, and that's really tough for me to put it down. So I love the short story format, and you can just consume a lot, and they hit sometimes with the weight of a full, from a longer length novel, that you get the same, you know, it's like emotional crack versus the longer just form addiction.
Soundbite machine.
Am I? Yeah.
This is great.
It's not like the heroin addiction that you normally cultivate over years.
It is not boring.
We don't think about that when it comes to games at all. Well, you know what? Tim and Dave, thank you guys so much for joining us on the show. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the series. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you.